Hello and welcome to An Engineer's Journey Through the Book of Mormon. We explore the Book of Mormon with the assumption that science worked the same then as it does now and that the characters are real people with the same types of feelings and tendencies as you and me today. The views and opinions expressed here are strictly those of the narrator and should not be considered official interpretations in any way. And now An Engineer's Journey Through the Book of Mormon. Hello and welcome back. Our last video ended with Captain Moroni preventing a man named Amalickiah from becoming King of the Nephites by creating the title of Liberty. Today in Alma 47 and 48, we'll cover Amalickiah's rise to power among the Lamanites. We will also briefly discuss Moroni's character as described by Mormon, the narrator. And now it's time to answer the trivia question from last time. When the Lamanites next attacked the Nephites, which city did they attack and why did they choose it? This is answered in Alma 49, which we'll get to in our next video. The city they chose to attack was the city of Ammonihah. If you remember back to the earlier part of the Book of Alma, Ammonihah was that city that imprisoned Alma and Amulek, murdered the wives and children of church members, and which was subsequently annihilated by a Lamanite army. But roughly 9 years had passed, and Ammonihah had been rebuilt. Here's 49 verse 3. Behold, I said that the city of Ammonihah had been rebuilt. I say unto you, yea, that it was in part rebuilt, and because the Lamanites had destroyed it once, because of the iniquity of the people, they supposed that it would again become an easy prey for them. The Lamanites wanted to attack the Nephites, and they remembered that Ammonihah had been an easy target last time, so they returned to attack it again. But to understand why they were attacking in the first place, we need to return to Amalickiah. Verses 3 and 4 of Alma 46 introduce us to Amalickiah. Verse 3 says that he was a large and a strong man. Verse 4 says, Amalickiah was desirous to be a king. A king. It doesn't say he wanted to be king of the Nephites. It says he wanted to be a king. So, when at the end of Alma 46, Moroni prevented him from becoming king of the Nephites, he escaped with a few followers to the land of the Lamanites and came up with a plan to become the Lamanite king. Chapter 47 tells us that no sooner had he arrived among the Lamanites than, we learn in verse 1, he began stirring up the Lamanites against the Nephites. He must have had some access to the king because verse 1 says, the king of the Lamanites sent a proclamation throughout all his land among all his people that they should gather themselves together again to go to battle against the Nephites. But although the king wanted to attack the Nephites, his army didn't. Verse 2, and it came to pass when the proclamation had gone forth among them, they were exceedingly afraid. Yea, they feared to displease the king, and they also feared to go to battle against the Lamanites lest they should lose their lives. And it came to pass that they would not, or the more part of them would not, obey the commandments of the king. Many of the Lamanite soldiers feared for their lives, knowing and remembering that they generally lost battles against the Nephites. So they refused to fight, and they fled into the wilderness. And now it came to pass that the king was wroth because of their disobedience. Therefore he gave Amalickiah the command of that part of his army which was obedient unto his commands, and commanded them that he should go forth and compel them to arms. Now behold, this was the desire of Amalickiah. For he being a very subtle man to do evil, therefore he laid the plan in his heart to dethrone the king of the Lamanites. And we'll see how he does that. He took the men assigned to him, and he chased after the rest of the army. He had been tasked with gathering them back and getting them all to attack the Nephites. The rest of the army that he was pursuing had gone to a, quote, place of arms called Oneida. Knowing they were in trouble with the king, they had retreated to a place where they could defend themselves, and they had chosen a man named Leontai to be their king. But Amalickiah really had no desire to attack them. There was a lot of back and forth, and eventually Amalickiah convinced Leontai to meet with him. Amalickiah had an unusual proposal for Leontai. He asked Lehantai and his men to descend from the hill at night with their army and surround Amalickiah's forces while they slept. Amalickiah would surrender after they were captured. All of the Lamanite army would be under Lehantai's control. In exchange for this, Amalickiah's only request was that he be made second behind Lehantai in command. Lehantai did exactly as he was instructed. He surrounded the Lamanite army, he accepted their surrender when they woke up and found themselves surrounded, and he made Amalickiah second in command of the combined force. But what was Amalickiah's motive? The narrator explains. Verse 17, "Now it was the custom among the Lamanites, if their chief leader was killed, to appoint the second leader to be their chief leader. And it came to pass that Amalickiah caused that one of his servants should administer poison by degrees to Lehantai, that he died. Now when Lehantai was dead, the Lamanites appointed Amalickiah to be their leader and their chief commander." So Amalickiah was now the head of the Lamanite army. He marched back toward the city of Nephi. Now it's the chief city where the king lived. And when the king saw his full army returning, and supposing that Amalickiah had gathered the armies to battle against the Nephites as requested, the king was happy and went out to meet him. A few of Amalickiah's henchmen went ahead of the army to greet the king. The Lamanite custom was to bow before the king, and then the king would tell you to rise. So Amalickiah's henchmen bowed, verse 24, "And it came to pass that when he had raised the first from the ground, behold, he stabbed the king to the heart, and he fell to the earth. As the king fell, his servants panicked and fled. Amalickiah's men seized this opportunity to frame the king's servants for his murder, saying, 'Behold, the servants of the king have stabbed him to the heart, and he has fallen, and they have fled. Behold, come and see.' Several soldiers chased after the fleeing servants. Seeing that they were being pursued by an army, they left the land of the Lamanites altogether and went north and joined the people of Ammon. Amalickiah then marched with his army to the capital city. He sent messengers to the queen, explaining that the king had just been murdered by his own servants. In response, the queen asked that he spare the city, implying that perhaps the entire city of Nephi was being held accountable for her husband's death. Don't know. She also asked that Amalickiah meet with her so she could learn more about how he had died. So Amalickiah met with the queen. He brought his own henchmen who had slain the king. They testified that the king had been murdered by his own servants. And as proof, they said, 'They have fled. Does not this testify against them?' And the queen was convinced. Not long afterward, Amalickiah married the queen and was acknowledged as king throughout the land of the Lamanites. His subjects included Lamanites, Lemuelites, Ishmaelites, and any group or individual who had ever descended from the Nephites." About these descenders, Mormon said this in verse 36. "Now these descenders, having the same instruction and the same information of the Nephites, yea, having been instructed in the same knowledge of the Lord, nevertheless, it is strange to relate, not long after their dissensions, they became more hardened and impenitent, and more wild, wicked, and ferocious than the Lamanites, drinking in with the traditions of the Lamanites, giving way to indolence and all manner of lasciviousness, yea, entirely forgetting the Lord their God." Now we move to chapter 48. No sooner had Amalickiah been appointed king of the Lamanites than he began preparing them to attack the Nephites. In what might be a parallel to modern propaganda and broadcasting, quote, "He did appoint men to speak unto the Lamanites from their towers against the Nephites." Amalickiah's goal was to be king of everyone instead of king of everyone but the Nephites. And so far, everything had gone according to plan. He was now the king of the Lamanites, and he had made them sufficiently angry, quote, "that he had gathered together a numerous host to go to battle against the Nephites. He organized his forces, and because the Zoramites had been Nephites until very recently, as we learned in previous videos, they were very familiar with the Nephite strongholds and cities. So he appointed them to be the leaders in his army. Verse 7. Now it came to pass that while Amalickiah had thus been obtaining power by fraud and deceit, Moroni, on the other hand, had been preparing the minds of the people to be faithful unto the Lord their God. Captain Moroni had been creating forts throughout the land, quote, to enclose his armies. He directed his people to build walls around their cities and borders. He stationed men from his army in these forts with stronger forces and the weaker forts. And thus he was preparing to support their liberty. The Nephite forces would have been very, very badly outnumbered. Also, since they didn't know when or where the next attack would occur, they had to be ready everywhere. And the Nephite army would have been spread too thin to have adequate numbers at each site. After Mormon spent chapter 47 talking about Amalickiah and his rise to the throne among the Lamanites, the narrator spent some time in Alma 48 talking about Moroni. And Mormon absolutely loved Captain Moroni. We'll learn later in the Book of Mormon that Mormon, the one writing the plates, was probably 24 or 25 years old when he first learned about Captain Moroni. At that time, Mormon was leader of the Nephite army fighting against an insurmountable foe. And imagine his surprise when he was going through the Nephite records when he learned about Captain Moroni. Captain Moroni seemed to be going through the same situation, and he was everything that Mormon aspired to be. In fact, Mormon named his own son Moroni. And as we go through the next several chapters, Mormon quotes Captain Moroni as often as he can, and as fully as he can, even if it's Alma chapter 60, where Moroni spends the whole chapter chewing someone out, and chewing them out wrongfully, as it turns out. He just loved including anything that Captain Moroni said. And for several verses in Alma 48, he describes Moroni directly. Here's verse 11. And Moroni was a strong and a mighty man. He was a man of a perfect understanding, yea, a man that did not delight in bloodshed, a man whose soul did joy in the liberty and freedom of his country, and his brethren from bondage and slavery. Then in verse 13, yea, and he was a man who was firm in the faith of Christ, and he had sworn with an oath to defend his people, his rights and his country, and his religion, even to the loss of his blood. Nephites, it says in the next verse, were taught to defend themselves even to the shedding of blood, if necessary, but to never give an offense or lift a sword unless it were to preserve their lives from their enemies. Verse 15, and this was their faith, that by so doing, God would prosper them in the land. Or in other words, if they were faithful in keeping the commandments of God, that he would prosper them in the land, yea, warn them to flee, or to prepare for war according to their danger. And also, that God would make it known unto them whither they should go to defend themselves against their enemies, and by so doing, the Lord would deliver them. And this was the faith of Moroni, and his heart did glory in it, not in the shedding of blood, but in doing good, in preserving his people, yea, in keeping the commandments of God and resisting iniquity. So although they were badly outnumbered, they trusted that God would help them know how to prepare and how to allocate their forces. Verse 17, yea, verily, verily, I say unto you, if all men had been and were and ever would be like unto Moroni, behold, the very powers of hell would have been shaken forever. Yea, the devil would never have power over the hearts of the children of men. Behold, he was a man like unto Ammon, the son of Mosiah. Yea, and even the other sons of Mosiah. Yea, and also Alma and his sons, for they were all men of God. Now behold, Helaman and his brethren were no less serviceable unto the people than was Moroni, for they did preach the word of God, and they did baptize unto repentance all men whosoever would hearken unto their words. And with that, Mormon transitions to discussing Helaman and his brothers. With Amalickiah having gone to the Lamanites and his deceptive teachings having ended with his departure, the Nephites humbled themselves again and were highly favored of the Lord. And thus they were free from wars and contentions among themselves, yea, even for the space of 4 years. For the next several years, as they battled the Lamanites, as we will see in the coming chapters, they were sorry to take up their arms. They were sorry to be the means of sending so many of their brethren out of this world into an internal world unprepared to meet their God. But notwithstanding their reluctance, their only alternative to taking up arms was to allow their wives and children to be massacred by the Lamanites and by those such as the Zoramites and Amlicites who had once been their fellow church members. All right, this video is a little shorter than usual, but we've reached a natural breaking point. The next several chapters, in the next few videos, we'll be discussing how Captain Moroni kept the Nephite people alive. And not just alive, but happy, while defending themselves against the Lamanites. And we'll end with a trivia question. When King Benjamin reorganized the Nephite government, Alma, or Alma the Younger, was elected as the first chief judge. When he stepped down to focus on preaching, he appointed a man named Nephiha to take his place. Today's question is, when Nephiha died, who replaced him as chief judge? Who replaced Nephiha on the judgment seat when he died? And we will see you next time.